Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Lindsay Vickers, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute of Politics was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 55 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to visit our website, www.hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. Today's forum is brought to you in partnership with the Lowell Benyon Community Service Center, which fosters lifelong service and civic participation by engaging the university with the greater community in action, change, and learning. The Hinckley Institute of Politics proudly presents the 17th annual Rocco C. and Marion S. Siciliano Forum. This year's theme is the future of U.S.-Latin American relations. This is one of 21 events that will extend through next Monday. For a listing of all the events, we encourage you to pick up a brochure in the back of the room. The title of today's forum is Indocumentado, Immigration and Youth in Crisis. Julie Stewart is going to be introducing the forum, so I'm going to give you a brief bio on her, and then we'll have her come up. Dr. Stewart is a faculty member of sociology at Westminster College. Her research and teaching interests revolve around global dynamics of displacement and local strategies of community building. She's published numerous articles on the politics of migration, focusing specifically on Utah as a new immigrant destination.
Okay. Well, thank you for that lovely introduction, and thank you for the invitation to come here today to be a part of this panel. It's a really important topic and one that I'm really passionate about. Let's see. Can you hear me? So I just want to start by sharing just a very short vignette about a boy that I'm going to call Victor. I met him some time ago, and he's a fifth grader at Roosevelt Elementary School. He's been an amazing student, is just been at the top of his class, and has such a love for learning that he's just an inspiration. Well, something happened in November that totally changed that. So Victor is the son of immigrant parents from Mexico, and in November his father was deported. And following that, I've seen the most incredible transition in this young man. He's no longer at the top of his class. He's now at the bottom. He is filled with anger. He's filled with desperation. And on any given day, rather than seeing him working on his math and his scholarship, he's face down in the principal's office having a breakdown. His life has been destroyed because of immigration policy in the United States. So I just want to share that story because that's why I care about these issues. Victor's father is one of an estimated 11 to 12 million undocumented immigrants living in the United States. Between 1 and 2 million of those are children. And today we're going to talk about undocumented children and youth in general, or in particular, but it's within the context of this larger population of people that are living here, working, raising families, being members of their community, but always always with the fear of deportation happening at any time. So just to bring this conversation a little closer to home, in Utah, there are approximately 250,000 foreign-born residents in the state. About half of those are undocumented. Now, in Utah, like in the United States, the vast majority of undocumented immigrants are from Mexico. And they come to the United States and they come to Utah for a variety of reasons. Some of those reasons are what we call push factors. They have to do with poverty in one's home country, lack of job opportunities, in many cases, severe violence, and sometimes a government that just doesn't represent oneself. And so then people trying to build a better life for themselves, follow those what we call pull factors and come to places like Utah and come to the United States. And what brings them here? Well, the same thing that brings anyone to any place, an opportunity for an education, an opportunity for a job, the promise of more security, the promise of being able to be with family and friends, because most undocumented immigrants that are here are joining some already pre-existing networks of family and friends. So keeping that in mind, that the number of undocumented people living in the United States, the motivation for coming, I also want to just explain briefly why people immigrants now are more likely to stay rather than return to Mexico or return to their home countries and come and go as was the pattern in the past. Well, what we've witnessed in the United States is a tremendous crackdown on migrants in particular and a militarization of the border. So basically now it's incredibly expensive, dangerous, and risky to cross a border. So if you cross once, chances are you're not going to try to go back and undertake that arduous journey again. And so what we have now in the United States is a population of people, again, people from ranging all ages, trying to make a living, trying to be a part of the community. And our immigration policy has not really allowed that. And so given the high degree of insecurity in which many people have been living, there was a policy passed a few years ago that will be the topic of today's conversation, which is referred to as DACA. And that basically provides some deportation relief from children who were born in outside of the United States but have grown up here. And then there's a sister piece of legislation or an executive action that's referred to as DAPA, which would also provide protection from deportation for parents of U.S.-born children like Victor, the little boy whose story I began my talk with. And so both of these policies were put into place in November, and they are both currently being challenged and are being suspended due to an ongoing lawsuit. And so this issue of what are the prospects for the future of immigrants today and undocumented immigrants in particular is really it's one of the most current issues we could think about. And I want to turn time over to the panelists now, but I just wanted to help us think about this issue in terms of both the policies that are important and then the lives that those policies are touching on in a very intimate way. So thank you, and I will turn the time over to Felix.
Hello, everyone. My name is Felix Vivanco Salazar, and I will be narrating this forum today. It's my pleasure to introduce these panelists, so we'll just start from here and go down. The first one is Anina Ferraz Valle. Anina is licensed in international relations through the Instituto Tecnológico Autónomo de México, with a master's in diplomacy and negotiation from the University of Paris, France. Her professional career has been focused on issues related to migration and refugees, having worked in the Mexican National Institute of Migration and the United Nations Agency for Palestine, Refugees in Syria. She has participated in various projects with the United Nations High Commission for Refugees in Mexico. Since March 2012, she has been working in community affairs with the Mexican consulate in Salt Lake City. Luis Garza. Luis is a current executive director of Comunidades Unidas, a leading nonprofit organization working to connect Latino community members in Utah with greater opportunities and service. Prior to working at Comunidades Unidas, Luis worked for the Salt Lake City Mayor's Office of Diversity and Human Rights, the State Office of Ethnic Affairs, the University of Utah Hospital, and the Utah Health Policy Project. Luis has a bachelor's degree in economics and international relations with a minor in business and a master's degree in public administration from the University of Utah. He focused his graduate thesis on Mexican migrant health, their access to health care services, and the particular challenges this population faces when interacting with health care systems in the United States. Sol Jimenez. Sol is from León, Guanajuato, Mexico, and is a third-year undocumented undergraduate student at the University of Utah. She is studying political science, sociology, and ethnic studies. Sol was active in the Salt Lake Dream. Dream refers to deployment, relief, education for alien minors. In high school, working to foster greater dialogue regarding immigration issues and helping with their community organization projects. Currently, she works at Mestizo Arts, an activism collective, a local international social justice think tank, working with concerned Latino high school youth through art. Sol is also a youth mentor at Latinos in Action at Glendale Middle School. Siria Alvarez. Siria is a second-year undergraduate undocumented student studying political science and sociology. She hopes to go into law school after. She leads the creation of both Somos Dreamers and the Utah Dream Advising Corp with Office of Engagement in the Office of Student Equity and Diversity to help undocumented students with their educational pursuits. Somos Dreamers raises funds for students at the University of Utah, and the UDAC works with high school students, advising, mentoring, and a community to have throughout their high school and college career. So with that, would you please help me welcome them? So we'll start out by asking them a few questions, and after we will have a Q&A, question and answer. So the first question, and if everybody could answer this question, is this. According to your participation and area of work, what are some of the most pressing issues facing undocumented youth today? With you, and then just go down.
Just like that? Do I need a microphone? No. Can you hear me? Yeah. Okay, perfect. Sorry. Oh, those. Thank you. Sorry. First of all, thank you for the invitation, and I see a large audience here, which means that a lot of you care, so that's something that it's on our purpose, right, and to send a message. So, and to answer your question, I think one of the first pressing issues for us, I work at the Mexican consulate, so in my field of action, what we see is a lot of people, a lot of young students that they have a feeling of not belonging to Mexico or to United States, right? And that's right because they were born in Mexico, but they live here and they've been living here for years, right? And they are being raised as Americans, you know, within a Mexican family, but they have these mixed feelings. And maybe you can talk about that later, but that's something that from my field I can see that this feeling of not belonging to anywhere is something that we need to pay attention to, and also to understand for us, and I'm going to talk about for our from the institutional point of view because I represent the Mexican government, and so we as a government and we as institutions need to understand that we are dealing with people. These are not numbers. These are, you said about 250 undocumented people, but behind that we have the stories, and we have people who want to continue their studies. They want to have a good job, you know. A lot of our students already finished high school, and they are looking for scholarships, but the opportunities are outside, but we need to send them the message, okay? We have institutions giving scholarships to undocumented students, but our undocumented students don't know. So we need to tell them and to be there for them and to inform them about these opportunities. And yes, that's the most important that I will say for us.
Okay, so for me, I work at Comunidades Unidas, like it was mentioned, and we see a lot of different migrant families that come through our doors and receive our health services or community engagement services, and especially the number one issue that we always see with our undocumented community, especially youth, is definitely related to what Nina mentioned in terms of access to services, but then also really the educational system here in the United States and here in Utah, I feel like there's definitely a lot that we need to work on in terms of how the system is set up and how the system works, because I don't think that there's we believe that the playing field is not leveled. You know, people don't have the access that they should have, and especially from the beginning, you know, starting from K through 12, which is you know, something that Alonso and I were talking about on the way here, but it's something that it's really important that our educational system does not necessarily provide the tools for our immigrant community to succeed. And I think that that's something that we need to really look at in order for us to make some sustainable change, because I can tell you so many stories that we hear from our immigrant families and how the expectations here for Latino youth are so low in our schools. You know, it's really sad to hear, you know, the counselors, the teachers, on how low the expectations generally are for a community. That really, that's, you know, it was highlighted in the documentary that the Hinckley showed last night. But it is really difficult for people to succeed when the expectations are so low. You know, when they, you know, heard stories of people telling, you know, counselors telling Latina woman how, you know, as long as you don't get pregnant and you graduate from high school, you are good. And so that's that kind of system, you know, it really perpetuates how our community is not advancing. So I think that's really the main change that we need to see in terms of how the system is working or not working.
It's not working.
So I'm really happy to be here, and I thank you all. I think I came up with two things right now that I could think of in terms of, like, what are the pressing issues for undocumented youth. I think with this whole deferred action and this whole DAPA debate that's going on, there's a lot of, like, forgotten communities, forgotten undocumented immigrants. Like, what about the students that aren't, like, benefiting from DACA necessarily? What about those students? I have DACA, but I still know personally plenty of classmates that don't have DACA. They can't work. There's no scholarship opportunity whatsoever. And that, to me, is probably the most frustrating, because it's completely isolating a group of people within undocumented immigrants. And then with DAPA, and I think that's a concern for a lot of us undocumented students, undocumented youth, is our parents. You know, we didn't come here alone. We weren't just, you know, we didn't migrate here. Our parents brought us here. And the way the discourse is put is that, oh, well, your parents brought you here, it's not your fault. And it almost kind of criminalizes our parents, but that's not, like, the state of the matter whatsoever. You know, our parents brought us here for a better life for us, so if anything, we owe it to our parents of why we are here. And so to completely take DAPA and turn it into this, like, issue of politics and public opinion for the sake of, you know, someone's, I don't know, political identity, when in fact you have lives, you have my parents falling under that, you know, that to me is completely dehumanizing, and I think that's one of the biggest concerns. So, yeah.
All right, well, I'm also really happy to be here, and I think that one of the biggest issues faced by youth is lack of support from institutions, especially in high school. When undocumented students are looking for scholarships or looking for any kind of aid, it's actually really scary to go in front of an advisor or in front of a counselor and say, hey, I'm undocumented, I don't know how I'm supposed to fill out this application. There's a part where it says Social Security, I don't know what to put. It changes with DACA, but even then it seems really difficult for undocumented students to get the help that they need. And even when they are able to receive help, a lot of it is really small. There's very limited private scholarships, and university scholarships are unavailable as well as FAFSA. So, yeah.
Thank you. Question number two is, what are you and your organizations doing to address these particular issues facing undocumented youth today?
Okay. And I just want to make a clarification here. I don't want to sound like I'm making a political announcement or promoting, but we are working for undocumented youth at the consulate, okay? I know it's hard to believe because I come from government and as an institution, but we try to, first of all, get involved with other organizations like Latinos in Action, like the same Comunidades Unidas, like all other institutions, just to raise our voice, right? To represent and to try to say in every forum and to try to say in every space that we have as a government, because they are going to listen to us, okay? And so we can say, hey, our government takes care and our government wants to get involved in attending this youth that is living here in the United States and specific in Utah. The problem that most of the institutions here in Utah believe is that they need to send the message that education is important. And not, that's not a good message. The message that you need to send is that education is accessible for our students, for our undocumented students, okay? And so to talk specifically, to talk about issues in detail, at the consulate we have these IMEBECAS scholarships, and we try to work with educational institutions at the University of Utah, Utah Valley University, Southern Utah University, Latinos in Action, and other institutions that give scholarships for undocumented students or that just want to help other type of students, right? Like maybe Mexicans that are here but and they with a visa or something and they do need access or funds. Another is we have these workshops that we work with the Enriching Utah Coalition, also with Comunidades Unidas, and we try to inform our community because we are undocumented or because we are afraid. They sometimes don't have access to information, or they are afraid to go and ask or take the phone and ask someone, and so they are victims of fraud and about from notarios or from lawyers or whatever. So one of the other issues is to inform the people in workshops, info sessions or whatever, and work with the coalitions and work with our partners in doing this, and schools and universities. Something else that we have is another issue that I forgot to mention, but Luis mentioned, is that we have this problem of access to health services, okay? And so maybe the undocumented youth is here, but they need to know about their opportunities to access health services in order to prevent going to the emergency room. So we have that information in the Ventanilla de Salud, which is the health window at the consulate, right? We work also with Comunidades Unidas, and we try to give them information every day on a regular basis and to promote free services, health services to the community, and that's basically what we do.
So a lot of the projects that we work on are in partnership with the Mexican consulate. So Nina mentioned those. So I won't go over those again. But the main goal for us in terms of trying to address these issues is to educate people. You know, so really educate our community about the different programs that are coming out of from the president or whatever programs are coming out. So really the main idea is to connect people with reliable information, reliable resources, so we know, so we can avoid fraud, so we can avoid, we heard of people paying thousands of dollars to apply for programs that don't even exist anymore, don't even exist yet. And so that's why it's so important that we continue to educate people and really inform them about all of these different programs, how they can apply. Also, our organization, people can apply for programs like DACA or DAPA when it comes out. So that's another service that we provide at our organization, so people can come and make an appointment and get the process started for DACA, for example. But then something that I think is really essential is that we empower our youth, that they know that we are part of the change. So we need to advocate for change in our community, otherwise things are going to stay the same. So there's a big component of advocacy that we need to start working on, so we let our representatives know how we feel about immigration, how we feel about executive action, and why it's important for all of us to support it. And so another thing that we're doing, so we started out, it's a little plug, but we started out a petition to, as you know, so there's a lawsuit against executive action, and Utah is one of the 20-something states that joined the lawsuit. And so we started a petition for Attorney General Sean Reyes, so he can withdraw the support of the state of Utah from that petition. So you can look it up online or on Facebook, and you can sign it if you would like. Well, that's some of the examples of things that we're trying to do to at least increase awareness so people know that things are happening and how we can support it.
So in the past 2 years, I've been working very closely with youth from the west side of Salt Lake, so the Rose Park and Glendale area. And something that I have found that I think, like through my experiences there, that's been really important is just sharing these stories with youth, letting them know that they're not the, if they are undocumented students or if they do know people that are undocumented, that they're not the only ones necessarily going through this. I know for me, you know, through my whole educational experience, I had a lot of fear and a lot of shame talking about my status. And it wasn't until other people, other students started sharing their stories with me that I finally found, like, the ability and the power and just the empowerment to be able to say, I'm an undocumented immigrant in the United States. I'm not ashamed of it. And I'm here trying to do what I want to do with my life, and it's okay. And that's what I've been doing recently. I work at the Community Learning Center, and I work closely with youth in Glendale Middle School. I also work with Mestizo Arts and Activism that works with high school youth. And that's a lot of what we do, is just sharing our personal stories, our experiences, what we did, what we've gone through as undocumented students, as, you know, ethnic minority students. So, yeah, that's what my answer.
I think what Nina said was really important, that we have to inform undocumented students and students who are first generation that education isn't, like, important, it's accessible. And I think that's really important, and that's what our student group is trying to do, Utah Dreamers Advising Corps. We know how empowering it is to know someone who is receiving a higher education, who's a master's student, who's an undergrad student, that's undocumented. So that's why we are trying to show who we are and advise, mentor students who are in high school, freshmen, sophomores, juniors, so that they know that when they come up to the university, there are students who are undocumented, and they too can get an education.
Thank you. Third question. In 2012, President Obama announced the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which is also called DACA. What is this program, and how has this program affected undocumented youth in Utah today? I can start with you.
Okay. So I don't want to go into the details, but basically it's a work permit that is granted to undocumented people between ages from 15 to 31, something like that. And it's a work permit valid for 2 years and renewable, okay? People qualifying for some of the requirements will get this work permit. And I just want to share with you some of the numbers that came from USCIS with numbers from December 2014. So Utah is not the first state with applications for DACA. It's the number 17 in the list. Okay, the first one is California, the second one is Texas, and the last one in the list is Maine. Okay, so what is this important for us to share? Because we know most of the undocumented people, or, you know, people documented, are not living in this state. They live, of course, in California, but Utah is still one of the important states, right? This is not a state of first destination, as we call them in the... we call it like California or New York or Chicago, but it's still important. Mostly it's a second destination. People not wanting to stay in other places with a more immigration regulations or more strict in immigration issues, they come here. Why? Because we have the church, okay? And because this is a friendly state. So it's number 17, keep it in mind. And, okay, the nationalities. So the first beneficiaries come from Mexico, of course. The second is Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, okay? Mm-hmm. So this is like a way that you can know the profile of these people, DACA, called documented.
I don't know what else I can add, but... So I think DACA, you know, like you was mentioned before, you know, there's definitely a lot of people that have benefited from it, and it's a lot of people that have now a work permit and are able to access more services and maybe a better education, but there's still a big group of people that are not applying for it, or they might not qualify for it, which is what we're talking about, that I think is important for us to educate them, you know, for if they qualify, that they can apply. I think there's still a lot of fear, a lot of people not sure, you know, if the program is going to stick around after this administration is over. So I think nationwide, the numbers are a lot lower than expected when the program was first launched because of that. You know, so I think there's still that fear component. So there's the big need for us to continue educating people about the program and how they can benefit from it. And yes, it's not a permanent solution, but it is something better than what we had before. But then ultimately, that's what we need to continue advocating for, comprehensive immigration reform. That I think it's ultimately what we all need.
you repeat the question?
Yes.
Felix.
In 2012, President Obama announced the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. How is this program? Well, what is this program? Which has kind of been explained already. But how has this program affected undocumented youth in Utah today?
Okay. So I think obviously like the most obvious answer is that like being a student myself that has benefited from DACA, I'm able to work. There's a lot of opportunities that I've been able to take because of deferred action. And I kind of put myself in this like mentality like what if I didn't have deferred action at this point in my life? And I honestly think half of the things that I've been able to accomplish or what the work I've been able to do, I probably wouldn't have been able to do it completely without deferred action. But I think going back to what Luis was saying, there's still this like limbo component of it. It's like, okay, what's going to happen next? Is this program going to keep going? Is it going to be renewed? And aside from that, you know, once again, that those group of youth, of students, of people that are still not benefiting from anything that's been coming out in terms of immigration policy. So it is a step. DAPA, once again, I think is another step. But it's to this bigger picture of comprehensive immigration reform where you're covering all 11 undocumented immigrants within this country. So, yeah.
Yeah, being a student as well who's benefited from DACA, I think it's good, but then it puts you in a really weird position because you're not fully undocumented. You have the protection of deportation, but you don't really get any other benefits besides a worker's permit. You're not a citizen. You can't apply for financial aid. You can't receive a lot of the benefits that would come if you were documented. And I think that's something that's really important to remember, that even though DACA is something that is helping, like Sol said, what we need is a comprehensive reform.
Thank you. Fourth and last question is, what are some ways that students, faculty, and community members can get involved with addressing these issues?
Okay. So, So first of all, I think being informed is something that we all need to do, you know. Understand what is this immigration reform. Understand that DACA might be a small step, but we still have a long way to walk, right? Then we need to, I'm not promoting activism here, but for those who can, they can raise their hand, write to their representatives or push in order to give a solution to these 12 million people that live here, okay? Parents and youth, and they need answers. And just I think we need to understand what the reality is, okay? I don't know when the Immigration Act was formed, but this is not the reality that we have here. This is a nation of immigrants, and we cannot continue with 12 million people undocumented and not doing anything, right? And from the point of view of the Mexican government, I believe that we also need to understand that these people are going back to Mexico. And so we also need to give some kind of answer and some kind of policies, you know, adapted to them. Because once these students don't find a solution or a job here, or they cannot continue with their studies, they go back to Mexico. Okay, and so this is a great potential for our government. I mean, I'm talking about people like completely bilingual, and people with other tools and other ideas that can give a lot to our government and to our society in Mexico, right? And something else that I want to tell here is that we need to start, I don't know how to say it, we need to think local, right? Like think about our community. When we talk about opportunities, education opportunities for our people here, I'm talking about the community is getting more opportunity. We are not talking about education for Mexicans or Guatemalans or whatever. Is when you give tools to education, you are going to improve your community, okay, which is Utah, which is West Valley, which is Rose Park, whatever. And giving tools to our community, by giving tools to our community, we are going to create a better society and work on it. Thanks.
I definitely agree with all of that. So, but I think the something I can push is activism. So I think that's the key, you know, that it's really all about making sure that your voice is heard, that you speak up and you say, you know, I care about this issue, whether you're an immigrant or not, because immigration is about all of us, and it's not just about the immigrant community. And so I think, you know, definitely signing petitions, writing letters to your representatives, meeting with them, you know, when they come to here or in Washington, wherever it is. But I think definitely making sure that this is a human issue. This is a human rights issue. So we all need to be staying informed about it and really speaking up about how we feel. And another really important part is sharing our stories. So we all have immigrant stories, whether we're first generation, second generation, whatever, especially here in Utah. We all have our own immigrant stories. So I think it's key that we put a human face to this issue and we share those stories. And we have so many... so many values, so many shared ideas and dreams in common, you know, the immigrant community and the receiving community, that I think it's a matter of communicating. It's a matter of really sharing those experiences so we can open up the dialogue and have a more, you know, cohesive society. So I think the potential is huge for us to start doing that.
So I work more closely with, like, educators and people within public education, so I think I'll speak more to that. But... going through the educational system as an undocumented student, I think one of the most important things that happened to me was my senior year in high school when I was, like, applying to the university, when I was going through that whole entire process. And I was actually, I think I was applying for early enrollment at the community college to do a class over the summer. And I filled out the application, and I went into my counselor's office, and I left out the bottom portion of it where it asked for, like, your social security number. I left that blank. And that still gets me. But he asked me, why'd you leave that blank? And I really have nothing to put there. And I think the most powerful thing that he told me, I started crying in his office too. He told me, it's okay. Like, it's okay. We'll figure this out. There's still, you know, we can do something about it. Like, it's nothing to necessarily worry about, but, you know, I was still at a stage of my life where I have no idea what my possibilities were, necessarily, because this was before deferred action and everything, and I had never really opened up at all in a school setting about my status until that moment, and so for me, I think what's really important and what the community can do is really, really, like, you know, not isolate people that are going through this experience and empower them and let them know that it's completely okay. Completely okay. So, I'm going to stop because I'm not looking good.
I agree with Sol. I think instilling hope is one of the things that is really important, instilling hope that their dreams can be achieved too. And one way that my student group that we started this past semester is doing is we're raising money for other students here on campus, specifically undocumented students here at the U. And we're holding a raffle. It ends March 6th. Each ticket is $5. I mean, if you really want to help today, you really can. You can buy a raffle ticket, and it really means a lot to the students who are going to receive the scholarships, knowing that faculty, staff, and students here at the U support them.
Okay, so now we'll open it up to you. So if you have any questions, you are welcome to stand up. We'll have a mic going around, and we'll gladly answer your questions. So with that, if any of you have any questions, anyone have any questions?
I do. Sorry. So I just stood because that's what you said. But I have a question about, so you talk about your programs and what you've done to create change, but how do you know it's actually being attained? How do we know what measures or what methods are you taking to measure that change is actually being made?
I think, can I speak to that one? I think the fact that I can sit here and say I'm an undocumented student publicly in front of everyone is a factor in change. I couldn't even imagine myself doing that 5 years ago. The fact that there's a forum, you know, talking about undocumented immigrants in the United States, to me, that's maybe not necessarily measurable, but for sure, like, a qualitative change, an impactful change. But yeah.
Another example is that, for example, the Mexican government organized last year a visit from Dreamers here to go to Mexico and to talk to authorities about it, right? To present books, to talk with some of them, went to Teotihuacan, the pyramids, and, you know, they organized a visit, like, I don't know, it was like a two-week visit or something. But these were, like, people, DACA students, that went to Mexico to their home country or the country where they were born, right? And so that I think it's a small step, because otherwise the Mexican government will say, like, yeah, whatever, we don't know about this issue, we don't know about what is Dreamers, what is that, what is these people, you know? And so the fact that they are organizing, that they did last year, and they are taking into account and working with Dreamers and working with undocumented youth and dealing about this educational issue and giving funds to undocumented students, and that the funds are more and more, like, we raised $100,000 last year, and before that it was like I think the half. So this is something, right? Like, the institutions and the people who need to care, they are maybe taking care a little bit. I don't want to say it's done, but it's something, right? It's a step. So
I'll just sit here, but hi, my name is Alonso, and again, thank you for being here. It really means a lot to me. I think I had the privilege, honestly, to like meet and know every one of you in a different capacity throughout my work with undocumented students and as an undocumented student myself at the University of Utah through an undergraduate program and now through a master's program. My question is, what should the University of Utah do as an institution, not just the faculty, not just the students, not just the staff, but what should the University of Utah do to ensure that students have more access to higher education in our entire state?
Well, I think one thing that I think is definitely important is the outreach. You know, so the community knows that the University of Utah is here, that they can come to university, that there's programs that can help, that there's scholarships, you know, that I know that you do go to different schools and different churches and things like that, but I think it's definitely a lot more that can happen, that in terms of how the University of Utah can be more of a welcoming place, you know, that people, that students, especially undocumented students, they know that they can come here, and yes, it will be a little bit more difficult for the rest of the students, but there is that possibility. You know, there's different programs, there's the advisors, there's this and that, so I think it's more of a marketing that I feel is needed there, because the community does not necessarily know a lot of the programs. You know, I know there's great programs like University Neighborhood Partners that are doing a great job, but I think there's still a need for more as to, yes, this is real and you can come to the university.
And if I can add, they can work as speakers to the, like, you know, like, they represent the institution, they represent the university, and they are doing great things. Like, they've been working with the IMEBECAS for a long time. They partner with us, but they can go and talk to the people who need to know, legislators, government in general. I don't know.
Thank you.
Thank you, panelists. I've learned a lot, and this has been very sobering for me. My name is Kurt Manwaring, and I'm studying political science here. And I wanted to ask you, I guess, about the elephant in the room. And it's a Republican elephant, so it's literally an elephant. And my question is, I guess I don't know how to ask this subtly, so I'll just ask it bluntly. With a Republican-controlled House, a Republican-controlled Senate, and an incredibly divided government, what are the prospects for actually passing comprehensive immigration reform during this Congress, and how do you propose actually getting it done in this conservative Congress? Thank you.
I have no answer to that.
That's what we all want to know.
No, but... Well,
go ahead.
So I think it's definitely been difficult, you know, and at least the advocacy that we've done and we, some of the national partners that we work with, is kind of, there's at least no hope in the next couple of years. But I think there's again, you know, that need for us to start getting active, you know, to register people to vote. You know, I think it's all about that, you know, to, if you know somebody who's a citizen, who can vote, that, you know, we do need to get out and vote. So our government will represent the community that lives or that in their district. You know, it's something even in our state legislature, you know, that how underrepresented our community is in any kind of leadership positions, including in academia, including in all of different places, that I think that there's a huge leadership gap that we have. And so I think it's a matter of us really, you know, again, building that leadership, that empowerment of our community, and really voting. I think that would be the one of the main things, you know, that we could start doing.
My question is really for especially Luis, City, and Sol, people of Latino heritage living here in the United States, at the very beginning we talked about how it's sometimes difficult to find an identity. Is that something that you've struggled with? And if so, how have you formed your identity here?
I think it really was hard, especially in high school before I met a lot of other students of color who were in higher education. It was really hard to kind of see myself in higher education because I really didn't have any family that was in college or really professional. So I think the way that I was able to find my identity was through community work, finding the community in Mestizos Arts and Activism, and seeing that there are other Latina, Chicano, Chicana people in higher education receiving a master's degree, a doctorate degree. And I thought that was really empowering, and I was able to find my identity and say, I'm going to be like them, and I'm not going to be ashamed of who I am as an undocumented person.
I'll speak to that as well. I think going off of what Celia said, I think a lot of it has been just through like community involvement and community work. I don't think I have felt completely comfortable up until maybe like the past couple years of my life where I've met other people that are going through the exact same thing in terms of being undocumented, in terms of being first generation in the university and such. And so working with other young students, older students, just and building a community around that and talking about the issues that matter to us, such as immigration, I think that itself has built an identity. So it isn't necessarily that you are identifying with like a certain ethnic group or something, even if though you can fall under the same category, but it's more of coming together with other people that share very similar concerns within the community. So.
And I just wanted to, to quickly mention, I came to the U.S. when I was 16, and I didn't know English back then, but I had one thing that was really, I had it for me, which was a green card. So it was really easy for me compared to all of our other immigrant students and our undocumented students. So I really want to emphasize how much the Dreamers have really changed the conversation here in this country in terms of immigration, because it's, you know, really, it was because of their advocacy, because of their stories, because of everything that they've done, that now we're at this point. You know, I think DACA is here because of the Dreamers, you know, because of all their activism. So I think it's really amazing, you know, to see you here and see everything that they have been able to accomplish. And I think it's all because of that, you know, looking for that identity, but really coming together, you know, and that's the most important part.
I appreciate your participation in today's forum. My name is Robert Neese, and I'm a member of the community and also one of the senior students here at the university. My question for you, are there programs that that matches community members with STEM skills at, say, the freshman level at the university here or at the high schools?
Well, the programs that we have from the Mexican government, it's, as I mentioned before, is IMEBECAS, right? And for us, it's basically the requirements for the Mexican government are that this scholarship need to go to Mexican students, and that they need to have financial need, right? And then if this is a matching fund that we do with institutions, other institutions, and it's open to everyone, they can apply, right? And if these institutions have a specific field of interest like STEM qualifications, they can do it. You know, that for us, for the IMEBECAS, for the consulate, is only they need to be Mexicans and they need to be in financial need, and that's it.
What I thought talking about are tutorial programs.
Oh,
people who would like to take advantage of community members with STEM skills?
No, I don't think we have that.
So at the Community Learning Center where I work right now, that's one of our efforts at this moment is to find the educational, the academic needs of students within that area. And obviously, that particular community, Glendale, there's a significant number of immigrant students. And so if one of, the academic needs, which is actually my job to find those academic needs, is more, within the it's science, technology,
right,
engineering, math, with that, then our purpose there at the Community Learning Center is to find people who can come in and give these students the guidance they need or the tutoring that they need within chemistry or AP biology, whatever it is they're taking. So there is an effort there in finding that.
So we have to close. We will take that one last question, but then we will have to close. If you have any questions after that, you are welcome to come up and ask the panelists.
Thank you. So I know that you've talked about many different ways of supporting the efforts or becoming informed, being active, and I think this comment goes to the panelists but also to us sitting here. If there's someone on the verge of being a white ally, whether it's here on campus or at the Utah State Capitol or any other spaces, what are additional things that would perhaps recruit more white allies, considering that this is a state that's predominantly white, to join the efforts of just supporting all that legal process, the access to higher education, and all those things that we've talked about. I don't know if that was a clear question, but I think it's more of prompting discussions back and forth, right? Not just from the panelists.
So I'll tackle that one.
There's a lot of ways to go, but I want to echo Nina's comment earlier that there's too much of a rhetoric and a discourse of us and them. I'm not saying necessarily us versus them, right? But us and them with undocumented immigrants being a different category, right? The fact is the undocumented youth and their parents are members of the community that are working, paying taxes, serving in their churches, being active in the community. I mean, these kids do so much more than I do, right? Volunteer-wise. And a lot of the discourse surrounding immigration is framed in terms of economic costs and benefits. But one of the messages that you get really clearly from the panel is that immigrants contribute to the greater good of our communities, right? By being active in their communities, through church activities, through a variety of ways, right? They are members of our communities, and as Nina said, they make them better places to live. In that sense, advocating for immigration reform in Utah specifically, or in the United States more generally, is really just advocating for people, for our neighbors, right? And that's what one of the answers that I could give to your question.
I'm sorry, sir, we have to close, but you're welcome to come up and ask any questions after. So with that, again, my name is Felix Vivanco Salazar. We would like to thank the University of Utah, the Hinckley Institute of Politics, along with these panelists and their respective organizations. And with that, we would like to adjourn this forum and give them a round of applause.